On a tape series such as this one, it's difficult to answer every question in the course of the tape, just as when we see patients in the clinic, it's difficult to answer every question they might have during an initial office visit.
And you know, the difference between them and you is that they continue to come back to the clinic and ask those questions as they crop up in their minds.
That's right, and so what we're going to do is we're going to go through a few of the more common questions that people ask, because these are many of the same questions that you may have as you go through this tape series and when you get started on the Protein Power Plan. So we're going to try to anticipate your questions and answer them in advance. And one of the most common questions that people ask is, what should I do if I feel dizzy or lightheaded?
Well, you know, that sometimes happens, and it can happen on any diet. It can happen even when you're not on a diet. But on this particular plan, in the first few days, or really for the first week, your fluid loss, and with it potassium and sodium loss, can sometimes make you feel a little bit dizzy or a little lightheaded. And so the first thing you ought to do anytime you feel dizzy is to increase your fluid intake. And if you haven't been taking your potassium to begin with, take your potassium. And even if you have been taking it, maybe raise the intake level just a little bit. If you've been taking 4, take 5, maybe even 6 of the over-the-counter potassium.
And the other thing you can do is add a little bit of sodium to your diet. Now, this is probably the only time you're ever going to hear a doctor tell you to add sodium to your diet. But in this case, because your insulin level has dropped rapidly and you're releasing this excessive fluid, sometimes it can be released a little bit too quickly, and you can get rid of a little bit too much sodium a little bit too rapidly. So you need to add a little bit of sodium.
And you know, in the summertime, that's especially important. If you're outside, you're working in the yard, or you're working out, and you're sweating a lot, you're going to lose sodium and potassium in sweat, too, and even a little bit of magnesium. And so on this kind of plan, when you first start feeling a little bit dizzy, one of the things you may want to do is to increase your sodium by eating dill pickles, for example, or drinking a cup of bouillon. Those things are a little bit on the salty side. And most times, doctors are going to tell you not to eat those things because they're salty. But this is different. This is a different kind of nutritional structure, and eating a little bit of extra sodium not only isn't harmful, it may actually be helpful.
Another question we commonly hear, especially from those that are going through the Protein Power Plan for weight loss only, they'll say, I hit a plateau. What can I do to get things going?
And that's a difficult question because it depends a little bit on the person. If you're a small person, I like to say if you're vertically challenged, if you're a little bit on the short side like I am, then you may not be able to tolerate as many calories as you're eating. That's one of the things that we sometimes have to tell small people to do, and that is to back up on their calorie intake just a little bit. You've got to create a deficit to lose. If you're taking in more calories in your diet than you're burning by the activities that you do, then you're not going to lose weight. Now, in this style of program, you may not gain a lot of weight, you may not gain any, but you're probably not going to lose if you eat too many calories. The other thing is that you really want to be sure to look at the carbohydrate intake you're taking in. For example, if you've stepped from phase 1 up to phase 2 level, and you're now eating 55 or 60 grams of carbohydrate a day, and you stop losing weight, well, that may be why. You may not be able to make an effective correction at 55 or 60 grams a day. In that case, you'll need to drop back to phase 1 and pick up there again, and that usually solves the problem.
But the first thing you need to do is not really focus on the weight loss so much and focus more on fat loss and make sure that the reason you're not losing weight is because you're gaining muscle. Because if you've been protein deprived, if you've been on a low-fat diet for a long time, which remember is kind of synonymous with a low-protein diet, often you may have been protein malnourished. And when you're suddenly getting good amounts, good reasonable amounts of good quality protein, you start to build lean body mass, and lean body mass weighs more. And when you get on the scale, if you've lost 3 pounds of fat in a week and you've gained 3 pounds of muscle, it reads out as no difference on the scale. But in actuality, you've really recomposed your body and you're a lot slimmer. It just isn't reflected on the scale. So make sure that that's not what's going on.
You know, one of the easiest ways to check that out is to begin at the very beginning of your plan by getting some article of clothing, a pair of jeans or a fitted skirt, and to take that article of clothing as your benchmark. If it's too tight when you begin, once a week, every week, try to put that thing on. And what you'll see in those weeks, sometimes when the scale didn't show any weight loss, is that you did have a substantial size loss. You lost body fat. Maybe you replaced it with some muscle and the scale didn't show a weight loss, but you really have decreased your volume, and that's really what we're after anyway.
Another reason that you can seem to gain weight or not lose weight is that you can increase your lean body mass. And we see this all the time in our patients. they'll start an exercise program, and when they do, they're going to build muscle. They'll be going along losing weight pretty regularly, 2, 3, or 4 pounds a week, and then bang, suddenly it stops. When we start questioning them about it, we find out that that's when they started an exercise program. They joined a gym, they started lifting weights, and all of those things build muscle. And again, they're replacing fat with muscle, and they're becoming slimmer and more healthy. It's just not reflected on the scales.
But what you want to remember is that the swap of a pound of fat for a pound of muscle is always going to be a good one. Muscle is metabolically active lean tissue. It uses calories, and every pound of it that you build is that many more calories in the day that it takes to run your body. So that's a swap you'll want to make all day long.
And I guess, lastly, let me add, try not to focus on the scales. So many people do that, and you know it can bring you to a lot of grief doing that all the time. Pay much more attention, as Mary Dan says, to the way your clothing fits, and don't worry about the scale. We've taken care of somewhere, I don't know, between 4,000 and 5,000, 6,000 patients, and we've gotten letters from people all over the country and calls from people everywhere, and we've lectured all over the country and talked to literally thousands and thousands of people. The people who do this and follow it correctly and stay on it will lose their weight. So don't despair. Just hang in there, and things will turn around for you.
Another question that people often ask is, will I be constipated on this program? And if I am, what can I do about it? Well, in general, as we talked earlier, if you make the right choices, if you spend your carbohydrate grams on the kinds of food that are really high in fiber and high in phytochemicals, then you're going to not be constipated. But one of the things that happens is that some people are not drinking enough water, or they're actually not getting enough fat. Now, that sounds crazy, but sometimes if you're really focused on keeping fat calories down and carb calories down, even though you're getting an adequate amount of protein and some fresh green vegetables and those kind of things, if you don't have enough fat, it can make you constipated. So those are things that you may want to try to look at if you're suffering a little bit of constipation.
Actually, more people probably complain to us about diarrhea than they do about constipation. It's really a much more common complaint, and usually we'll find it starts a few days into the program and resolves itself as the program goes along. It's just one of those things that comes about, as it often does with any kind of change in the diet. So I really wouldn't worry about it, but if it continues, you should see your doctor.
And the other thing about constipation is that you might want to look at exactly what protein sources you're using. There are some people who are relatively sensitive to the arachidonic acid that's found in red meat and egg yolks. If you look back at your diet diary and you see that almost every day, at almost every meal, your protein is either red meat or egg yolk, that arachidonic acid that's there might lead to a change in the microhormone messengers, the eicosanoids, that can make you constipated. So backing away from those things a little bit and eating more fresh fish if you can, particularly cold water fish like salmon or mackerel or sardines that are high in EPA fish oil, that can help constipation as well.
Another thing that people sometimes will say to us is that once they've started the program, they start feeling a little bit fatigued. Now, I always explain this to patients when I put them on the program. I tell them not to really do anything strenuous for a few days until they adjust to the new diet, because they haven't made the enzymes yet. They have to adapt to a lower carbohydrate diet. Now, enzymes are what our body makes to catalyze all these chemical reactions that we've been talking about, these reactions that are going on all the time and that make us us. If it weren't for enzymes, we would all be just lumps of chemicals sitting here that would never react for 1,000 years. We have to have the enzymes to catalyze all these reactions, and our DNA codes for all these different enzymes, but we don't have all these enzymes running around all the time. We just make the ones that we need. And when we start a new type of diet, it requires new enzymes to make it work, and it takes a few days for those enzymes to get coded from our DNA and produced by the body. So until that happens, your body still thinks it's back on a higher carbohydrate diet, and it takes that time for it to adapt. So when it does adapt, you'll have more endurance and you'll feel a lot better. In fact, you'll even notice almost the very minute when this happens, you'll suddenly feel better. It's almost an epiphany. But until that happens, expect to be a little bit fatigued, and don't go out and try to make all those life-changing changes in one day and start your diet and go down and start at the gym and work yourself to exhaustion.
You know, the other thing I think patients sometimes experience is a sensation of sort of feeling out of gas in the first few days. It's like you're going along fine and all of a sudden they have this little slump. And a part of it is this enzyme thing. They haven't coded for and produced the new enzymes that they need to deal with their diet. But what they do about that slump can make a big difference. In the first few days, I'm always careful to counsel our patients, if you feel that slump, if you feel a little hungry, don't try to solve it by going out and eating carbohydrates. You'll just put yourself back behind the eight ball. So what you want to do is this. If you're going to eat something, you're going to overeat something, overeat on protein and fat during these first few days. Keep some things around that are readily accessible for you to have that are not going to disrupt the hormonal balance that you're working so hard to achieve. Keep things around like macadamia nuts or seeds or sunflower seeds or almonds or other kinds of true nuts or seeds that are really pretty good sources of quick energy. Peanuts aren't as good because they're not really true nuts. They're legumes like beans. So they're not as good a choice as the true nuts. Lean cuts of meat, deli meat, leftover meat from the night before, hard-boiled eggs, deviled eggs, something that you can turn to quickly to get some protein and some fat to give yourself a little pickup without disrupting the metabolic harmony you're trying to achieve.
Or my absolute favorite, a piece of cold chicken.
You know, sometimes patients will tell us that they've been on the diet for a couple of weeks, and at first they were a little bit tired, and then they started to feel fabulous. And they were just chugging along, and they were doing great. And then now all of a sudden they feel exhausted again and their legs start to ache.
You've just described almost a textbook case of hypokalemia, and that's low blood potassium. Now, I know we've talked about this before, but I can't overemphasize the importance of taking potassium. As we've said several times in these tapes, the vast majority of problems that people have with this program come because they don't take their potassium. Because this program has a diuretic effect on the kidneys and it gets rid of this potassium along with the fluid. So, if you're feeling weird at all, if you have lightheadedness, if you have tingling, if you have fatigue, deep muscle fatigue, if you have muscle aches, if you have muscle cramps, you're probably low on potassium. And that usually comes on about a week or so after you get into the plan. So, if that happens, we recommend that you use Morton's Light Salt, which is a potassium substance, or a potassium salt that you can use to salt things. Or No Salt is another good one. Those are both Morton's Light Salt and No Salt are both brand names of a potassium containing salt. And make absolutely sure that you take your potassium supplements that you've gotten at the health food store.
And you know, if the symptoms continue, you really should go to see your doctor and get your potassium level checked. It's such an easy thing to do.
And find out if that's truly what it is. And while we're on the subject, if you're taking any blood pressure medicine or diuretics, you absolutely must check with your physician or pharmacist before you take potassium supplements, because some of these medicines prevent the body's release of potassium. And if you take a lot of extra potassium while you're on these medicines, that can cause some problems. So you really need to check with a physician if you're on any type of medicine before you start this program, because this type of a program has very potent metabolic effects that act very, very quickly. So don't try and just play around with it a little bit and see what happens. If you're on medicines, check with your physician.
Another question that people often ask who really like to eat carbohydrates is this. Do I have to spread my carbohydrates around throughout the day? Or can I just save them all up and eat them at once and kind of blow it out? Well, you really can't save them up, unfortunately. Carbohydrates have an expiration date with each meal. There's a metabolic impact to eating carbohydrates. If you eat 10 grams of carbohydrate, you're going to raise your insulin a little bit. If you eat 20 or 30 grams, you're going to raise it more. If you save all 40 grams throughout the day and you ate it all at once, you're really going to have a metabolic impact. Your insulin's really going to go up. And so it doesn't help to deny yourself carbohydrates all day and save them up for one big blowout. That's sort of the carbohydrate addict's diet philosophy. And with regards to what it does to your insulin, it just doesn't work. When you do that, you're going to shoot your insulin up in the air and you're back on the roller coaster. So up insulin goes and down blood sugar goes and your desire to eat is right there. And so you really do yourself more harm than good when you try to save up carbohydrates and use them all at once.
Now, if you want to eat a little bit more carbohydrate than normal, the time to do it is in the morning. Because, like many of the body's physiological functions, insulin has a kind of a circadian or daily rhythm. And our cells just have a greater sensitivity to insulin early in the morning. And anything that makes our cells, or I guess actually our insulin receptors, more sensitive to insulin means that we don't have to make as much insulin to make them work. And whenever we make less insulin, then that lower insulin is causing fewer problems. So it's been shown that people are a little bit more insulin sensitive in the morning than they are late in the day. So if you're going to take in a few extra carbs, the morning is the time to do it. And it's interesting, in America we do it just the opposite. People often skip breakfast. A lot of times they'll just eat a little bit for lunch and then they come in at night and pig out. And that's the exact opposite of what you would want to do if you're taking into consideration this circadian rhythm of our insulin sensitivity. We could probably all lose weight and do better without changing our food intake at all if we just ate more in the morning and less in the evening. So it's important, if you're going to eat a few extra carbohydrates, try to do that early in the day.
You know, we've taken care of a lot of patients, maybe gosh, over 4,000 or 5,000 of them over about a 10-year period. And the one thing that they frequently come back and say to us is that they suffered with indigestion or gastroesophageal reflux for years, and maybe they even had to take medication to stop it, and once they start this diet, it seemed to go away, and they want to know why.
Yeah, that's interesting, because in virtually 100% of the cases, people with gastroesophageal reflux clear up when they go on this program, and it's because this program, by lowering insulin levels, shifts the production of some of these little microhormones called prostaglandins that can cause bad inflammation and pain in the esophagus, that's the swallowing tube, and even in the stomach. And they shift into a different type that doesn't cause that inflammation, and it happens very, very quickly, and that's almost a 100% deal. People that have had this indigestion and GE reflux and often ulcer disease will get better almost overnight on this program. It works spectacularly quickly. So if you're on Prilosec, and that's a medication for this problem, or if you're taking loads of antacids to stop these problems, when you start this, you can get rid of it all because it's going to get better, and it will be better within a week.
Another question people often ask is, if I make some of the changes you recommend, for example, cut back on some of my carbohydrates, will I still see improvement, or do I need to follow the program exactly to the letter to get results? Well, there's no doubt that the closer you follow the program, the better the results you're going to get. I mean, that seems to make perfect sense. But we've tried over the years cutting back on carbohydrate a little bit, cutting it incrementally, kind of slowly bringing it down, and what we found is that that doesn't do the job very well. When you want to correct an insulin problem, the very best thing you can do is to cut it back, get the insulin controlled, and let the metabolic hormones stabilize, and then go on from there.
In the 4,000 or 5,000 or 6,000 patients that we've taken care of, we've tried everything. We've tried all different permutations of this program. We've tried to ease people back slowly on their carbohydrate intake, and we've tried to really cut them back severely and then give them some slack as time goes on. And what we've found works the best is cutting it back to the lower amount and then giving them slack as time goes on. When we try to ease people onto it gently, it just doesn't work as well. And unfortunately, that's just the way it is. Our physiology doesn't respond that way. So if you really want to get results, you've got to cut back. And then as you start to kind of get in this dynamic weight loss phase and get everything corrected, then you can add the carbs back in slowly. But it really works much, much better and much more rapidly to cut back right at the start.
And what we're talking about there is these intervention phases. Once we've intervened and you're approaching your goal, whatever that goal is, whether it's a weight goal or a body fat goal, or whether it's cholesterol or triglyceride reductions or controlling your diabetes, whenever you get to where you're about to hit that goal, then the thing to do is to make the transition to maintenance. And that carbohydrate level will be substantially higher than the one that you used to correct the problem. So what we do is to cut down severely at first and then bring it back up and finally balance it to maintain.
Which brings us to kind of an interesting point. There's a dietary program that's out right now that's very popular that's called the Zone Diet, and it was devised by Barry Sears. Now, Barry Sears is a close friend of ours, and we've worked with him a lot and argued a lot over our different dietary philosophies. And Barry has kind of made his mark taking care of a lot of elite athletes. Now, these athletes can get by with a lot higher carbohydrate intake, and Barry puts people on a lot higher carbohydrate intake than we do. But we've discovered in our years of treating just average, everyday patients with all the problems that they had that they do much, much better on a lower carbohydrate restriction right at the start. Interestingly, a study appeared a few months ago in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, probably the world's premier nutrition journal, in which the Zone kind of diet and the protein powered diet were compared. Now, the researchers didn't do this on purpose, it just kind of worked out this way, but this was done in Switzerland at the University of Geneva in collaboration with Stanford University. And what these researchers did is that they took a group of patients who couldn't lose weight on their own and put them into the hospital in a metabolic ward where they could be observed continuously so that they knew there would be no cheating involved and so that they could really control the amounts of food that these people got. And then they basically compared these two types of diets. They put one group on a higher carbohydrate diet. It was still a reduced carbohydrate diet compared to the average American diet, but a little more carbohydrate in the diet. It more approximated the Zone diet. The other group of patients, they put almost exactly on a protein powder style diet. And what they found out over the 6 weeks that they were followed was that the patients on the protein power style diet lost a little bit more weight than the ones on the Zone style diet. Not a significant amount.
And a part of that was because they were both reduced calorie diets and the same number of calories, right?
Right. Both groups were on the same number of calories. But the really interesting thing that came out of this study is that when they looked at the insulin levels on the Zone diet, they dropped their insulin levels by 8%. Now, you'd think that's pretty good, that they had a reduction in insulin levels, and it is good compared to what would have happened on a higher carbohydrate diet. But on the protein power style diet, in this same period of time, these people dropped their insulin levels by 46%. And as you would expect, they had corresponding differences in blood pressure and cholesterol and all the other parameters that they evaluated. In virtually every parameter looked at, from blood sugar to cholesterol to high blood pressure, the people on the protein power style diet performed much, much better, mainly because they had such a much more rapid lowering of their insulin levels. So it's for that reason that we start people with a lower carbohydrate content and work up from there.
And you know, sometimes our patients will take that information and say, well, will I lose weight faster if I just cut out all carbohydrates altogether? And if I did it, would it be dangerous?
Well, actually, it wouldn't be dangerous at all. In fact, there are a lot of societies that live on no carbohydrates. The Australian Aborigines, for one, live in the desert, and they eat mainly meat diets out there because there's not a lot of plant food that grows out there. The Eskimos get almost no plant material in their diet or no carbohydrates in their diet, so the human biochemistry is designed to do very nicely without carbohydrate. As I've said before, there are no carbohydrate deficiency diseases, but there are lots of protein deficiency diseases. We need protein. We've got to have protein, and if we don't get protein, we die. Really, if we don't get fat, we die. There are fat deficiency diseases. We don't die as quickly as we do if we don't get protein, but we die nevertheless. But if we don't get carbohydrates, nothing happens. And that's why it's never made sense to us to go on a high-carbohydrate diet at the expense of our fat and protein, because we're taking in lots of something that nature has obviously given us the biochemistry to make, and we're doing that at the expense of these two nutrients that we absolutely need. So as far as not eating any carbohydrates, yeah, we could do okay with that, but we miss out on some of the phytochemicals and some of the antioxidants that we find in plant foods. Plus, that kind of a diet, one without any carbohydrate at all, gets boring in a real hurry.
And that's really why we modified our plan in the way that we did. If you just put in the 7 to 10 grams per meal of effective carbohydrate content on phase one, and that's the most restrictive plan we have, you still have plenty of room for green vegetables, colorful vegetables, cruciferous vegetables, and certain fruits, so that you can get all of those phytochemicals and other micronutrients that maybe we haven't even discovered yet, but that occur in these kinds of foods.
And plus, it makes dieting a lot more fun and a lot easier to stick to when you have the variety that kind of diet provides versus just strictly a meat and cheese diet where the carbohydrates are cut to zero.
Another thing that people sometimes complain about is that they get a funny taste in their mouths or they get bad breath on this kind of diet. Why is that?
Well, this diet sometimes puts people into a slight degree of ketosis, and as we'll talk about in the myths of carbohydrate dieting, ketosis really isn't a problem at all. It's a perfectly natural function, and when we restrict carbohydrates, we tend to make a few more ketones. But that's fine, because our body deals with those just fine. And in fact, as we'll talk about, a lot of tissues, the heart muscle, for example, like ketones better than it likes anything else. So being in ketosis in and of itself is not really a problem. The body gets rid of those ketones in a number of ways. It burns them up, that's one way. But if we're producing a few more than we're able to burn up, we get rid of the excess in our urine mainly. Some of it goes out through the stool, and some of it goes out through the breath. And when it comes out through the breath, it gives it a funny taste in our mouths, or what's perceived as a kind of a bad or a fruity smelling breath. And it's real easy to correct. You can increase your carbohydrate just a little bit until it goes away. You can drink lots and lots of fluid so that you carry most of it away in the urine. And that's probably the best thing to do.
And lastly, you can use some sort of breath freshener, which is fine, a little Tic Tac or a Certs or something like that. But you got to be careful using too many of those, because some of them have a fair amount of sugar in them, and you don't want that.
And this doesn't really happen to everybody, and it's really only a problem in the early phases of the program anyway. After you get going and you adapt to it, that tends to go away. So I really wouldn't worry about it except in the very early phases of the program.
And while we're on the subject of ketosis, some people complain that they have a little bit of trouble sleeping on this diet. How does that work?
Well, heavy ketosis can cause sleeplessness, and that's one of the symptoms of that, a little bit of insomnia. So if you're producing and releasing a lot of ketones, you may have this problem. And if you do, that means that you can increase your carbohydrate intake a little bit, more so than someone could that maybe doesn't have this problem, and that should get rid of it.
So maybe if you're on a phase one intervention, you could move up to phase two, or maybe just add a little more carbohydrate into your latest meal, your dinner meal, or your evening snack.
Yeah, to suppress the evening ketone production if that's a problem for you. Most people, though, find out that they actually sleep a lot better when they go on this program, and it's really just a very, very few that have this problem with sleeplessness.
Other times, people say they don't have any trouble getting to sleep, but they wake up starving at night. and they've got to raid the refrigerator and they eat whatever they can find before they go back to sleep. That's usually not a problem on this plan. They're talking about their life before protein power. What is it about this diet that will help stop those cravings?
Well, these really aren't cravings. What happens, and this goes back to our problem with gastroesophageal reflux and indigestion, what happens is that when we're producing a lot of acid, it can cause us to wake up in the middle of the night. In fact, our body has this kind of acid production surge at about 4 or 5 in the morning, and we don't really perceive that as pain, but it wakes us up nevertheless. Our body perceives it as pain even though we don't on a conscious level. And we know that if we eat something that it buffers that acid and kind of neutralizes it, although we don't go through that thought process, we just know that if we eat something, we feel better and go back to sleep. So that's what often drives people to do that, and when they're on this program, because of that switch we were talking about and the production of eicosanoids, the little microhormone messengers, our acid production is much lower, and this surge, even though it still takes place, is much more blunted. So typically we don't wake up with it. You sleep through the night soundly. These are a few of the more common questions that our patients ask us, and we get in letters in our clinic every single day. So I hope this helps, and I hope that this has answered some of the questions that you may have as you embark on the Protein Power program.
We hope this helps answer the questions you may have about the Protein Power Plan, but if you come up with something that's completely different that we haven't addressed, please drop us a line. We'd love to know what it is and get you an answer.
We're going to spend the next few minutes discussing a foolproof method of making you healthier, slimmer, and even physiologically younger. It's a true fountain of youth.
And it's called exercise.
That's right. And just like with diet, there are a million misconceptions about exercise.
In fact, about the only thing most people do agree on about exercise is that it's essential to milking all the pleasure we can get from a long and healthy life.
Well, let's look at the ways diet and exercise combine for the most synergistic effect, because diet plays an enormous role in determining the ultimate benefit of any kind of an exercise program.
Just as with weight loss or cholesterol lowering or any of the other health problems we've been discussing, with exercise, the low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet comes up short again.
Right, and the goals of an exercise program are to increase muscular strength and endurance and to enhance performance. Muscles increase their strength by enlarging and becoming more dense and getting rid of their marbling, you know, like what you see in a steak, the fat inside the muscle, and by more efficiently tapping into their fuel supply, which, surprisingly, is not carbohydrate.
No, it's the fat stored within the muscle.
That's right. So muscles become more conditioned by increasing their blood supply so that they can better get the oxygen this blood carries to burn the stored fat, because fat requires lots of oxygen to burn efficiently.
Building stronger, more conditioned muscles leads to better performance in all of athletics and really, no doubt, in all of life.
That is correct, and the only way in which muscles can really grow and develop endurance is if we provide them not only the exercise to train them, but the proper nutrition to maximize their development.
And what's the single most important nutrient for muscle growth?
Well, I'll give you a hint. It's what all muscles are made of.
Right. Protein, and that's exactly what they need, and lots of it.
We can't build and successfully train our muscles without adequate amounts of good quality protein, just the thing the Protein Power Plan provides.
And it's the substance lacking from the low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet that so many exercisers follow religiously, and then they wonder why their exercise program doesn't seem to be working as well as it should.
But providing enough protein isn't the only thing the Protein Power Plan does. It also sets the stage metabolically for muscles to develop at their fastest. All the low-fat, high-carbohydrate diets actually hinder muscular growth by not providing enough protein and by actually suppressing the body's release of a certain hormone that's critical to muscular growth. This is a hormone that we haven't really talked about yet, but that we're sure you've heard of, and it's called human growth hormone.
Or just growth hormone for short. We make it and we store it in our pituitary glands, which are small glands that are located right at the base of the skull.
And growth hormone is the most powerful muscle-building, fat-burning substance around, and we make it ourselves. It's a true fountain of youth.
It's really just about the only substance that turns back the aging clock. And again, we make it ourselves. Unfortunately, we release less and less of it from our pituitary glands as we age.
That's right, and kids, especially teenagers, release large amounts of it, and that's really what separates us from them.
Well, that and a few other things.
Have you ever experienced this scenario? You get up early and you work out. You go to your job and you put in a full day. You watch your diet. You deny yourself virtually everything that looks good to eat. Then you drag yourself home only to find your teenager sprawled half asleep in front of the TV or on the telephone amid this huge jumble of empty pizza boxes or hamburger containers, soft drink cans, and candy wrappers.
And then he or she comes to life and they rear up and they ask, "What's for dinner?" And you do a slow burn. I mean, you've worked hard all day. You've exercised. You've dieted. And you still have a roll around your middle that you're having a tough time ditching while your kid lies around all day, moves only to get up to get more food, eats at least three times the calories that you do, and yet is slender, muscular, and if forced, could probably run circles around you. It's not fair. What's going on here?
It's really simple. The kid has lots of growth hormone, and you have very little. Actually, you have just about the same amount as your kid. You just don't release it unless the circumstances are just right, whereas your kid releases it just about all the time.
Well, what are the right circumstances? Exercise, the correct type of exercise, and the correct diet. Not all exercise stimulates the release of growth hormone, and neither do all diets.
Some exercise stimulates the release of growth hormone better than others, but no kind of exercise actually inhibits growth hormone release. Exercise, depending upon the type, has either a positive effect or really not much effect at all on growth hormone release, but the same can't be said for diet.
No, some diets enhance growth hormone release, while others actually do inhibit it. And the high-carbohydrate diet truly does inhibit it.
It actually inhibits it so much that it even affects many teenagers, the very group that releases the most growth hormone. Because the teenage diet in America has increased in carbohydrates so much over the past decade or so, we're now seeing an enormous rise in adolescent obesity.
And it's mainly from this carbohydrate-induced growth hormone suppression effect.
Well, let's take a look at a standard medical school biochemistry text and find a list of the factors that enhance or stimulate the release of growth hormone.
Okay, here they are.
Well, first we find decreased blood sugar levels.
Increased protein levels.
A carbohydrate-restricted diet.
Fasting.
Increased protein diet.
A free fatty acid decrease.
Stage 2 sleep.
You know, your mom was right. She said you had to get a good night's sleep to grow.
That's right. Exercise.
And exercise is a biggie.
So, with the exception of the sleep and the exercise, it sounds just like the protein power plan.
Exactly. And so, that's the first step, adopting the protein power plan.
And did you notice that this list is almost the exact opposite of what you get with a low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet?
No wonder all that carb loading that athletes do isn't doing them much good.
Uh-huh. And it's no wonder that there are so many tired exercisers. Now, we didn't make this list up. It's from a standard medical biochemistry text.
And we also didn't design human biochemistry or physiology. That came with the package.
What we did do is design a nutritional program to make it work optimally. And as we've said many, many times, the whole protein power plan is nothing but applied biochemistry.
You know, that's the first part of the growth hormone story, but the second part is the actual exercise. And as we've said, all exercise is good, but what we want you to do is the exercise that will make you release the most growth hormone.
And what kind is that? Usually fairly strenuous exercise. You know, just doing a few jumping jacks doesn't hack it. You've got to really put out to get a growth hormone release. And the type of exercise that stimulates the most is resistance training, weightlifting. As you lift weights and strain your muscles, they develop little microscopic tears that apparently call forth the release of this growth hormone to repair them, which it does, and then as a benefit actually stimulates the growth of new and bigger muscle fibers.
And the growth hormone then converts those muscles into fat-burning machines. And at the same time, it stimulates the release of lots of fat from the fat cells to provide fuel for those muscles.
Growth hormone is the most potent fat-burning substance we know of, so we want all of it we can get. But before we talk specifically about the best way to exercise, let's look at our medical text to find what inhibits growth hormone release so that we can avoid those things.
And this list is smaller.
That's right. First, increased blood sugar levels.
Increased levels of fat in the blood.
Obesity.
Pregnancy.
Well, we can't do a lot about that one. But since increased blood glucose is number one on the list, it behooves us to avoid anything sweet or starchy or otherwise carbohydrate-laden before, during, or just after our workout.
And also, remember that first list that we talked about, what your mother told you. Sleep increases the release of growth hormone, but a sugary snack right before bedtime.
And you can kiss your growth hormone goodbye. So, The single best exercise we can do to improve our health is to lift weights. That's true. Aerobic exercise is good, but it really doesn't deliver all these extra benefits that resistance training does, and lifting weights is the best resistance training of all. And it seems like every day a new medical study comes out showing how much more efficient resistance training is in improving the health of really everybody, even including the elderly.
You know, you don't actually have to go get a set of weights or go to a gym to do resistance training. You can do it at home with your own weight, your own body, in a door or a wall. And I tell this to our patients in the clinic all the time. Ones that maybe are too heavy actually to go to the gym and work out, or they don't want to go to the gym and work out. Every day, before you get into the bathtub or the shower, that's probably the best time to do it, pick a door or a wall. And you're going to want to stand about 2.5 or 3 feet from the wall. You want to keep your feet flat. You want to keep your back straight. Think of pushing the small of your back out towards the wall behind you. Now, don't bow your back in. Just keep a nice straight back. And place your hands on the door, sort of at shoulder level, and let your arms and shoulders take your weight, and do a push-up against the door. Now, at this angle, you're only going to be pushing about a quarter of your weight. But if you weigh a lot, that can be a pretty big lift. You can change the amount of weight you're pushing by stepping a little closer to the door or a little bit farther back. And you can try that to see how it feels differently. Now, do the push-up against the door. Let yourself go slowly into the door and push yourself away. Now you've just done a door push-up. You can do a couple of those a day, really of three different types. One with your hands flat on the door in front of you, the way you would think of kind of as a normal push-up, and one with your hands tented into a little pyramid or a little triangle. Let your hands come together, your fingertips really, in front of you, right in front of your nose. Let your body weight go into the door and push yourself out. You'll feel the difference. It's going to work the backside of your arm, your triceps muscle. You can tell the difference. And now, for the third one, put your hands on the door jamb, spread widely apart, and let yourself into the door and push out. And what you'll feel is that that works the front part of your chest, the pectoralis muscles. So with those three simple hand positions and your own weight, you can do push-ups at home or at a hotel if you're on the road, and there's no excuse for not being able to do your resistance exercise if you do it that way. Start with one or two of each of those types of push-ups and work up to maybe 10 of each of those types every day. And when you can do 10 of each of those smoothly and efficiently and without a strain, then you're ready to do push-ups on the floor.
Well, what this means then is that anyone can do push-ups, and you don't have to be athletically developed or athletically inclined, and you don't have to do the old military-style push-ups to get some benefit.
Absolutely. Anybody can do them, any place, and they can start slowly and work up. The last thing you want to do is hurt yourself.
Now, these push-ups that we're talking about are like weight training. They're resistance exercises, and working out with weights or doing any kind of resistance exercise is going to strengthen your joints. It's going to increase the density of your bones, which prevents osteoporosis. It's going to increase your muscle mass. It's going to improve your endurance if you do it correctly, which we'll talk about in a little bit, and it's going to decrease your insulin levels.
That's right. It'll actually help you decrease your insulin levels.
And, as we've already seen, it's going to stimulate the release of your own growth hormone, which improves just about everything.
Each and every pound of muscle mass that you pack on becomes a fat-burning dynamo. It allows you to increase your food intake without fear of fat gain. And as your muscle mass continues to build, your body will begin to re-sculpt itself. You'll lose those little handles and bulges of fat that you never could get rid of before, no matter how hard you dieted. And best of all, once that new muscle's there, and as long as you continue to work it, your metabolic rate is going to increase, allowing you to eat more than you would ever imagine, even of carbohydrate foods, without the negative consequences.
No more working hard to lose your weight, only to watch it balloon back up as soon as you start eating normally again. You'll actually be able to eat more than when you started and continue to lose fat. It really sounds impossible, but it actually works like a charm, if you do.
Now, if you're female, you may be thinking, well, that all sounds great, but you're not really so keen to look like the Incredible Hulk. But don't worry. Female hormones, or really the lack of male hormones, will keep you un-Hulk-like, even if you train extensively. The women you see in bodybuilding magazines who do look like well-developed males have often had a little help from their friends, the anabolic steroids. Sweat and your own growth hormone will slim you down by decreasing your body fat.
and the muscle growth you experience will be in the filling out of muscle tissue in places that is atrophied or kind of gone away from underuse, and increasing the density of the rest of your muscles. When you start, your muscles are going to look like a piece of choice steak with fat marbled all throughout. And as you work out and follow this nutritional plan, you'll quickly begin to replace this intramuscular fat, this marbling, with more muscle, making your muscle not necessarily larger, but denser.
And a word of caution here. If you're trying to lose weight, you may be disappointed if you follow the scales too closely, because as your muscle mass becomes more dense, it becomes heavier. The new muscle adds weight, and the more fat that you replace with it, that's a good swap. You make that exchange anytime.
Anytime you can increase muscle at the expense of fat, you've made a big gain on the situation. And don't focus on the scale, as we've talked about before. If you do start resistance training, don't focus on the scales, because you're going to be building some muscle and you're going to be losing some fat, and they're going to kind of cancel out one another for a little while.
So, how do you get started with this?
When you get ready to begin your basic resistance training program, you really need to follow just a few basic guidelines. First, start with light weights. First, to strengthen the ligaments and the tendons and the connective tissue around your joints, which are really the weakest link when you begin, and they're the most prone to injury and discomfort. And only after your joints have been stabilized and strengthened with a few weeks of light weights should you begin your really serious muscle building. Now, if you're going to start out with the door push-ups, this really doesn't apply, because you kind of strengthen your tendons right along as you do that. But I'm talking about just the people that are really going to get right into weight training.
This applies more to men than it does to women. Men are much more prone to go to the gym and be swayed by what the guy that had the machine set in front of them did. And he thinks, well, if he can lift that weight, so can I. But don't hurt yourself. Start out light so you can get your ligaments and bones and joints into condition first.
Yeah, don't fall into that trap. It's really important, because when you go out, and you men who are listening, I'm sure have done this, when you've gone out and really started a weight or resistance training program, and the next day everything hurts, but mainly the joints hurt, and that's because your ligaments and tendons haven't been conditioned. Start first with a more rapid exercise with the smaller weights. Now, to achieve the quickest results, you want to work your biggest muscles first.
For instance, do push-ups, or squats, or deadlifts, or leg presses, anything that works those big muscle groups.
That's right, and what you want to do is work these big muscles, because if a large muscle mass increases by 5%, that gives you a much greater net gain than if a smaller muscle mass increases by 5%. And the more muscle you have, the more fat-burning capability you have, and the better off you are all the way around.
And always, always use perfect form. You know, the idea is to work to strengthen that particular muscle group, not to lift a specific amount of weight. If you have to arch your back or change your position to complete the sets that you're doing, go to a lighter weight. As long as you can keep your back straight, you'll go a long way toward avoiding injuries.
That's probably the single thing that you can do that will help prevent injury the most. If you're laying down doing a bench press, for example, press your back against the bench. If you're sitting on an upright kind of a chair doing upper body exercises, press the small of your back against the back support. If you keep the small of your back against whatever support you're up against, you're going to avoid injury to your back. The minute your back comes out, the minute you arch your back, the minute the small of your back comes out and you start to strain, you change the mechanics, and you're much more prone to injury, so make sure to keep the small of your back flat at all times.
And don't forget to recalculate your protein intake. If you begin to gain lean body mass, you're going to need to feed it a little bit more protein. And if you start working out hard, more days a week, more hours a day, you're going to need more protein.
And to maximize your growth hormone release, always perform your workouts on an empty stomach. Don't consume any carbohydrate snacks anywhere near the time of your workout, or it's adipose growth hormone.
But don't try going all day long and then having a hard workout. If you let your blood sugar get too low before you work out, it can make you sick to your stomach. So, you know, eat a couple of hours before a workout to be sure that your blood sugar is not too low before you begin. And what you really want to do here is work to increase power, not just strength. Let's look for a minute at the difference between those two things.
All right. Strength is basically how much you can lift. If you can struggle up with 150 pounds over your head, that's strength. Power is how fast you can lift it. Being strong doesn't mean being powerful. Just because you can lift 150 pounds is not the same as really being able to snap it up there. So what you want to do is to work to increase your power. So when you do your repetitions or the exercise, work to increase the speed at which you do them. Don't just keep adding more and more and more weight and struggling up with it. Sit a weight and work until you can really snap out your reps. And only when you can do that with perfect form, then increase your weight and you'll be building power as well as strength.
And try to make your workout aerobic so you get the benefit of both weight training and endurance exercise. You do this by not slowing down and resting so long between sets. If you have to decrease the weight you push to do that to keep from becoming exhausted, then do that. Remember, start with the lightest weight that you can efficiently work and go up slowly from there.
And don't start your exercise program until at least a week after you start the Protein Power Plan. We've already talked about this a little bit before. You're going to experience this sort of a transient period of fatigue right at the start, and you're going to compound this if you jump out and start an exercise program the same day that you start your diet.
So what we're saying is get stable on the nutritional regimen and then begin to work out. You know, in our clinic, patients always seem to know themselves when they're ready to do that, and it's generally what we tell them. When you feel like you're ready to go, go for it. When you feel like you have the energy to work, go out and do it.
And when you're working out and you're trying to move your one last repetition and you're really straining and struggling, remember, that's when you're releasing growth hormone. So that's the take-home message from this whole tape, is that you really have to work to release growth hormone, and don't inhibit it by eating all those things that you shouldn't. Give yourself plenty of protein and keep your carbohydrates restricted so that you'll set the right conditions for growth hormone release, and you're going to do fine, and you're going to build muscle, and you're going to lose fat.
So go get busy.